I'm a grateful alcoholic. My name is George.
Hey, George.
My sobriety date is January the 19th of 1994. And, it's important that I say that. Maybe not to you, but to me it is. Last week we talked about the first step, and I don't know if I did or didn't last week, but at the beginning of the 12 and 12, and I, like I said, I'm going to use both books, and every week you're going to hear me say, this is my favorite step, and this is my favorite part of the book. I don't say that on step one, but I do from now on in. Because I have such a love for the literature and the fellowship and the love that was given me by the people that were here. And that's really about what the second step is about. But there's a little synopsis in the context of the 12 and 12. And I didn't read it last week. It says, why we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable. Who cares to admit complete defeat? The mission of powerlessness is the first step towards liberation. Relation of humility to sobriety, mental obsession plus physical allergy. Why the insistence that every AA must hit bottom first? And I gave you some of my insanity when I first, before I got here. While I'm here, I still have that insanity. Just because I stopped drinking doesn't mean I got sane or sober. Sober means to do without. Emotional sobriety is a whole different thing, and it takes a long time to get there. And I'm going to strive for it because I don't know if I'll ever reach it. It's one of those things I learned that I'll never be more than perfectly imperfect. Now, I didn't know that when I got here. I thought I was perfect and you guys were all flawed. And that was my first step. And it says, you know, working my way to the second step, I had to come to believe I had an illness. And if I review the first step a little bit with you guys, and it talks about it on page 18 of the big book, an illness of this sort, and we've come to believe in an illness, affects those about us the way no other human sickness can. It engulfs all whose lives touched or suffers. It brings misunderstanding, fast resentments, financial insecurity, disgusted friends, and employers. The warped lives of blameless children. Anyone can increase on this list. And you know, and then it's a little further on, and this is the orbit of the alcoholic. We don't talk about that a lot. I wish we did. And on page 82, it talks about the alcoholics, a tornado running through the lives of others. Sweet relationships are dead. The home is in turmoil. We feel that a man is unthinking when he thinks says sobriety is enough. He's like the man who walks out of the cyclone cell and remarked to his wife, "Don't see anything the matter here, Mom. Ain't it grand? The wind stopped blowing." Just because I stopped drinking doesn't mean I wasn't chaotic. It talks also about no words can talk of the loneliness, despair I found, and the bitter remorse of self-pity. I don't know about anybody else, but I'm real comfortable being miserable. I like that misery enough that a drink looks good. And I was driven by 100 forms of fear, self-pity, and self-seeking. And I talked about a little bit about that last week. It says, quicksand stretched all around me. I met my match. Liquor had become my master. That's what I thought of when I got here. That my only problem was my drinking, and in my case, the other substances that went along with it. Powdered alcohol, pilled alcohol, it's alcohol. The big book says alcohol in any form, and I've tried all forms. You figure it out for yourself from there. And it doesn't matter. I have respect to the room I'm in. I didn't have that when I got here, and I'll talk about that in the second step. It says we often his human will failed. Doctors pronounced him incurable. Society wanted him locked up. Like myself, he admitted complete defeat. Now, that's the first step. Admit to my own inner self that I can't drink safely. Now, I can tell you that, but I wasn't admitting it. I was saying it because it was warm in Florida, and I didn't want to go back to the cardboard box in the cold winter of New York in 1994. So I said it to be a part of, not that I really believed it. See, I didn't believe it yet. So I really didn't get a gripper on that first step for a while. I had to get to my first step a little backwards. I got to page 62 to talk about selfish self-centeredness. And then I went backwards, and I remember page 30. It talked about the different methods we tried. Here are some of the methods we tried. Drinking beer only, limiting the number of drinks, drinking alone, never drinking in the morning, drinking only after a certain time. And you can add on that list any way you want. I did all that stuff, and it never worked. And that's part of my second step also. So that insanity was still there. So I went from my selfish self-centeredness to the more about alcoholism, back to the illness, And then I finally got him back to the doctor's opinion, where it said men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. And that was me. I liked the effect. I said last week it didn't make me bigger, it didn't make me better. It made me feel normal. I danced better. None of those things happened to me. Now, if that's your experience, by all means, please don't change it for me. That's your experience. Mine is it made me feel okay within myself. And that's why I drank. It didn't matter whether it was sunny out. It didn't matter if it was nasty out. It didn't matter if it was a good day or a bad day. I drank because I like what alcohol did to me. And we'll talk about insanity of the second step in a minute. So if you're planning to stop drinking, the book tells us there must be no reservation or no lurking notion. I love that word, lurking notion. I didn't know what a lurking notion was, but I had plenty of them. Yeah. My sponsor says, you have reservations, cancel them. It's the way I was told it. So in my first step, I was having a lot of problems because I really didn't believe I was an alcoholic. I knew I had other problems. I had a problem with the state of New York. I had a problem with my job. I had a problem with my ex-wife. I had a problem not seeing my kids. And the problems, the list went on and on and on. Alcohol was never the problem. But if I take away all those problems, alcohol was always involved. Or other substances. So if you want, when you honestly wanted to, you found you couldn't quit drinking, or when drinking you had little control of the amount, the book tells us you're probably an alcoholic. The man who carried a message to me went a little further. He says, listen, the book doesn't say we don't pronounce anyone an alcoholic, says we would rather not. In your case, you're a drunk. You need some help. Are you willing to let go of your ideas? I said, yes. And he says, I don't believe you, but I'll work with you anyway. Now, that's my experience. Now, there's promises in the first step. We talk about nine-step promises. One of the promises of the first step is that it's our first move towards liberation. It says we start to recognize that humility is a path to sobriety. Humility, not humiliation. Big word. We'll talk about that in step two, too. The admission of powerlessness leads to a happy, purposeful life. Now, those are nice promises. Because I didn't think I was worthy of anything good in life. My abilities when I got here were, I was useless, I was helpless, I was hopeless, and it was everybody else's fault. So I could never look at myself, I was always blaming others, and that's also part of the second step. Now, the literature in the 12 and 12, and I'm gonna jump between the two of them, there's that synopsis again of step two. It says, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. What can we believe in? A does not demand belief. The 12 steps are only suggestions. Importance of an open mind. Variety of ways to faith. Substitution of AA as a higher power. Plight of the disillusion. Roadblocks of indifference and prejudice. Lost faith in AA. Problems of intellectuality and self-sufficiency. Negative and positive thinking. Self-righteousness, defiance, is the outstanding characteristic of an alcoholic. Step two is the rallying point to sanity, right relationships to God. And that's, when I read that, that's a lot, man. I don't know about you guys, but I wasn't ready for that. And when I walked into these rooms, I read those 12 steps, and I didn't do that last week, but I'm going to tell you how I saw the 12 steps. I was not powerless over alcohol, and my life was not unmanageable as long as you behaved the way I wanted you to. And I believed in a lot of powers greater than myself, although I didn't think any were stronger than I was. There was no decision in step three to turn my will and life over to the care of God because there was no God in my life, so I didn't need that. I didn't have a moral inventory. I lived in the streets of New York for years, so I wasn't going to do a fourth step. I wasn't admitting to you what a low life I was. I already knew that in step five. I wasn't going to tell anybody else. I knew myself, and God and I weren't talking, so I didn't need that step. I didn't think there was anything wrong with me, so I didn't think I had character defects, so I didn't need step six. If I didn't have character defects, I didn't have to ask that they be removed, so I didn't need seven. I liked eight and nine, though. I made a list of everybody that screwed me over my whole life, and nine, I figured they'd come and tell me how sorry they were for what they did to me. And in the tenth step, I took everybody's inventory, and I came running around the rooms and told you what I thought about you. Not a good way to live. I had no prayer and meditation in my life, and I used all the excuses of why I didn't have it, and there was no message of hope, or any message of steps. So that's how I saw the 12 steps when I walked in here, and that proved how unmanageable I was when I got here. So, you know, the second step, come to believe in the power greater than myself. Now, I knew what that said. It said, behind it, you're turning it over to God. You weren't fooling me with that one. So I had a lot of powers greater than myself, although I came in here denying any of them. I'm very grateful for the traditions, and this is the one step I really get to talk a lot about, traditions. I had three higher powers when I came in here: money, property, and prestige. And I don't know if any of you can relate to that. What can I buy with it? How big was it? And how good did it look on my arm? Money, property, and prestige. If we read the sixth tradition, it says money, property, and prestige will divert us from our primary purpose. And our primary purpose is to stay sober and help another alcoholic. Well, it's not about how much I have or how big amount of money I got or what job I'm holding or what girl I'm living with or what a building I'm, you know, what apartment I have or how big my house is. None of that stuff matters anymore. And that's all that mattered to me. Those were my higher powers when I walked into these rooms. That's what I chased my whole life. I ended up running a union. I had a very, very, very good job. So I was not a failure in that field. When it came to relationships, that's another story. I didn't know how to have any. And I blamed everybody else for them not being well, whether it be my children or my ex-wife, and we'll get into more of that as we go through different steps. And my ability to do that was based on the fact that I thought I was God. I don't know if anybody can relate to that one. So coming to that second step, I was still unmanageable. And I didn't believe there were powers greater than me. And I used that third tradition, to walk into these rooms. I had a desire not to drink, but I would come in here and tell you I have a desire not to drink. And then I'd talk about every substance in the world, hoping you'd throw me out. And then I'd walk across the room to the other fellowship, Narcotics Anonymous, and say I was an alcoholic, hoping they'd throw me out. See, my walk perception figured if you threw me out, I could justify the fact that I can go out and drink again, or drug in my case. So I was not looking for a power greater than myself, although there was always a power greater than myself working in my life. You know, there's a whole lot I can say when I got here to make that surrender. Now, I have to surrender not only in step one. I believe each step there's a new surrender, and that's my experience. I surrender to each step differently. And in the second step, there was a surrender. It says, why all the insistence in an AA hit a bottom? My bottom was under a bridge, in a cardboard box, and it was no different than the person who walked in who had two glasses of wine and realized their life was out of control. That zero down here under a bridge, or that zero at 18, or 27, or 37, or in my case, 44, zero is zero. We're all equal when we walk in here. There's that first tradition that was saving my life when I walked in here and didn't see it. See, that second step was coming to me through a second tradition. See, I came in on a sixth tradition. My powers were money, property, and prestige. And what ended up happening was that there was a loving God and he was expressing himself in this room. Now, I lived in a halfway house when I got here. Not that any of you guys can relate to that. And I was always complaining about who stole my cookies. What meeting? Why did I have to get on the bus to go to the meeting? Why couldn't I talk to the girls? All the stuff that we all go through. Who took my silverware? Who gave me a jam for not washing the dishes? Why isn't the garbage taken out? And I used to go to my sponsor and complain about my problem of the day. And I tell my sponsor the problem of the day, and he gave me a solution of the day. And one day he says to me, George, what's your problem going to be tomorrow? And I started to tell him. Just shows you how sharp my mind was when I got here. And that shows you how unmanageable I still was. Now, I turned my will and life over to a caring man that I didn't really know, but I trusted. For some reason, there was a bond there that I had. And it says, why did you insist that every AA hit a bottom? Now, bottom is bottom. They used to say when I come in here, I don't hear that as much anymore, believe each bottom, there's another bottom. There's a trap door. And the final trap door is death. Now, I remember that from when I came in. And my bottom was good enough. And somebody used to say to me, and his name is Kenny Kane, who's around a lot of years, he used to say, your story's good enough, none of you have to add to it. Your story's good enough, you don't have to add to it. And I'm glad he said that, because I didn't think I was as bad as some people, and I knew it was a lot better than others, so I didn't think I deserved it. So I was always judging myself, and they told me to identify and not compare. I had a lot of trouble with that. And it says in the 12 and 12, it tells us that the answer that few people will sincerely try to practice the AA program unless they have hit bottom. For practicing AA's remaining 11 steps means the adoption of attitudes and action almost no alcoholic still drinking can think of taking. It says, who wishes to be rigorously honest and tolerant, who wants to confess his faults and make restitution for harm done, who cares anything about a higher power, let alone prayer and meditation. No, not the average alcoholic, self-centered to the extreme. Unless he has to do these things in order to stay alive himself. So it's under the lash of alcoholism we're driven to AA. There it says we become open-minded as only the dying can be. See, I had to believe I was dying, and I didn't for a long time. And I was dying in more ways than one. Physically, my body was gone. Emotionally, I had nothing left. Spiritually, there was nothing there to start with. So I was pretty empty, and I didn't know how this was going to turn around, and I didn't think it was going to work for me. So I made a decision with my sponsor that what seemed like a novel idea to read the big book and report back to him when I finished the first 164 pages, and he seemed like a novel idea. Why don't you choose your own conception of God? When I got to that second step, now there was a lot of powers greater than myself. I used that second tradition because there was a loving God in this room. I don't know how many times my roommate stole my cookies or didn't take out the garbage. And I'd want to walk into a room and I would hear somebody talk about what was on my mind. And I didn't understand how they knew what was going on with me. See, it was all about me. I didn't know about anybody else. And when I got here, it was all about me because I love when you guys, we talk about the word projection. In New York, I was a projectionist. That was my legitimate job. And when you guys were talking about projection, I was sitting in a room wondering how everybody knew what I did for a living. It shows you how sharp my mind wasn't. And that's what I really believed, you know, and I sat there wondering how everybody knew who I was. See, I'm no different than anybody else in this room. I just may have a few more days between my last drink. What makes me where I am today is my relationship with the process that went on to keep me away from a drink on a daily basis. That's the only thing that makes me different. Otherwise, we're all equal. Now, whoever got up before me, and that's going to be real easy today because I didn't wake up till 2 o'clock this afternoon, they got more sobriety. Now, that sounds good, but I didn't get up because I couldn't move last night. My legs were hurting. I was in physical pain. So I spent a little extra time in bed and a little extra time in prayer this morning. But we're just a set sober. What we got, the best any of us will ever have, is 24 hours. What a wonderful thing that is to know. So, you know, getting to that second step, I'm still confused. I don't know what a higher power is. I have stories that happened to me along my way. I was on a bus. I wasn't driving. I wasn't allowed to drive for 6 years of recovery. I didn't ever tell that story. I should. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I had a license. I went to move it from New York to Florida. They took it away from me. I never got a DUI. I never had a speeding ticket. I had some parking tickets, but they were paid. And I come into Florida, and they pull my license from me. It has to do with the state of New York, me and my ex-wife fighting. I was a deadbeat dad, although I wasn't, but that's what I was accused of. So they yanked my license. So I started off with a pink bicycle. Love that. 44 years old. And I park it outside of a meeting one day, and I walk out and it's stolen. So now I'm angry. And then from that pink bicycle, I got what they used to call a go-board, a little gas engine skateboard. 44 years old. And then girls in the room look right. I can imagine me asking somebody, I want to get back my skateboard. Come on, you know. That's how warped my thinking was. But that's really the way I saw life. And for 6 years, I drove a skateboard. And I was from a skateboard actually 3.5 years. And I was offered a job. I was called by a union that I didn't work for down here to go and be the third person to do a job, to go for a job interview. And I had one of my friends drive me from Plantation. I drove up to Plantation from Pompano. And when I got there, they offered me the job, and I took it. Now, I didn't know how I was going to get there, but I took the job. So what ended up happening is I talked to one of my friends, and he went out and bought me a 49cc scooter. And they say, how willing you go to any length? I drove an hour and a half every day, each way, to do work for $312 a week. Because I was making $1.97 at a time. That looked like a big paycheck for me. And that's where I started. And I drove like that, and I eventually got a car. Now, you see, there was a higher power working in my life, and I didn't even know it. Because I didn't speak to that union that called me for that job interview for 3 years since I was down here. I was not looking for a new job, and I wasn't looking for a car. And then I got stopped a little later on, tell the story of how I got my license, in Cooper City by a cop. And I go to, and I pleaded innocent. I didn't know the laws changed. And I go before the judge. I, innocent, and I told him with explanation, and he said, what's your explanation? I said, well, it's 49 cc's, and you don't need it. He said, that's the old law. You're still responsible. So he didn't charge me for the ticket. He said, you got to pay court costs. But I want you to go down to the motor vehicles, and then I want you to come back here and show me your license. And, oh, man, this is going to kill me. So I got a $320 court cost, which I was not happy about. And I go down to motor vehicles, and I go in, and I tell them, the judge told me to go get my license. Whatever record was that was holding me disappeared. So I believe God in his own way, my higher power was working in my life. And I've had that license since I was 6 years sober, and I still have it today. And that's a privilege. It's not something that I get because I'm sober. I had to earn that. And those are some of the things I believe, one of the stories I like to tell. The other story I tell is about this little book right here. I'm not going to show you it. I was on my way down from my treatment center. I was on a 38 hours from hell, I call it. And I got this book. And when I left the treatment center, I'm reading the book. I get off my luggage. I was so sharp when I left that I wrote that I was going back to the treatment center and I was leaving from the place I was going to. And what ended up happening, when I got off in Fairfax, Virginia, I had no luggage. My luggage was gone. They sent it back to my treatment center, because that's where I wrote that I was going, and upstate New York. And I didn't know where I was going, and I had nothing to read, and I walked in, and I just went over to a shelf, and I picked up this book. I'm showing the back end of it, because it's a little bit religious, and it's about Alcoholics Anonymous. And I wouldn't read the first part of it because it's something from the Bible, and then there's a little short story, and there's a little prayer, and I've been reading that. I read that in my first 2 years of sobriety. It was like my 24-hour day book or my daily reflections book, and I kept reading it. And I refused in my second step. Here we are in my second step, and I'm still looking at this thing because I know you're going to be talking to me about God, and God and I aren't talking. So how do I get there? You know, I kept reading this, and here was God again. Here's my higher power in my life. Here's my higher power in my life that I'm 6 months sober, and this is going to sound really strange to some people. And I walk out of an AA meeting, and I'm served with papers to give my children up. And I'm angry, and I'm mad, and I get real upset about it. And I wonder how God's working in my life because my children are coming out of my life. See, I didn't realize God was already working in my life. My higher power was doing for me things that I was never going to be able to do for myself. And that was also part of my second step. So how did I get to this second step? How do I come to believe? Well, I was a real struggler with my sponsor. I would give him a hard time. And there's certain things in the big book that I always relate to. One of the things is, and I'm going to get to the 12 and 12. I'm trying to watch that clock because I never have enough time with this. The thing in the big book that I was told, on page 25, we read there is a solution. And at the bottom of the solution, it says, if you're alcoholic as we were, there's no middle-of-the-road solution. We have been placed in a position where life has become impossible. We have two alternatives. Go on to the bitter end, blotting out our intolerable situation as best we could, or accept spiritual help. This we did because we honestly wanted to or were willing to make the effort. See, I made that commitment to my sponsor that I was willing to make the effort. So he suggested I read a book called Came to Believe. It tells about how other people found their relationship with God. And I read that book, and then he asked me, well, if I was to make a higher power, what qualities would he have? And I wrote them down. So that's what I first prayed to, the qualities of what I believe my higher power was. I will tell you that over the years, that those qualities have changed. My higher power hasn't changed. What has changed is my perception to all of that. See, I have a warped perception, I have faulty judgment, and I have a tremendous amount of lack of awareness. So getting to the second step, I did what the Bill and Ebby did when Ebby sat down and he said to Bill, why don't you make a God of your own conception? My sponsor told me the same thing. He outlined the spiritual answer for me. He said, the answer's right there, right behind you, those 12 steps. That's your answer. Now, if you want to take the journey, I'll put your hand in God's. First, I'll put your hand in mine, and then I'll put it in God's. And then you'll figure out how to put your hand in someone else's hand to take them and put their hand in God. I said, are you crazy? I don't want any relationship with God. He says, you already have one. You just don't want it. What was my problem? My problem was lack of power. That's the dilemma. The book talks about it. And it says, where and how to find the power. That we find that through the book. That's the purpose of the book. To find a problem, to find a solution that will solve your problem. And my problem, I thought, was drinking and drugging. I didn't know I had a lot more problems than that. It says, much to our relief, we discovered that we need not to consider another conception of God. Thank God nobody told me how I needed to believe when I got here. I practiced EST years ago. I did TM. I believed in pyramid power. I did Eastern religion. I did metaphysical stuff. I had no conception of what I believed God was or wasn't. I had childhood memories, and it talks about it in the big book that some of us had the impression of what people enforced on us in childhood. I had a lot of that, and I wasn't looking at a God, yet alone a higher power. So I really struggle with that second step a lot. And it says, when we speak to you of God, we mean your own conception of God. I had no conception of God. Now, God was ugly to me when I got here. God was punishing. God was very mean. My grandfather died a terrible death. I didn't speak to God since I was 7 years old, and I wasn't going to start at 44. So he suggested that I get to the 12 and 12, and I'm a big 12 and 12 person. And it says, and what I like about the 12 and 12, it's going to talk about different types of alcoholics. And for every alcoholic, they lay out the problem. They lay out a solution for them. They talk about the first one, the one who won't believe, the belligerent one. He's in a state of mind that is described as savage. His old philosophy of life, which he glorified, is threatened. It's bad enough he thinks that alcohol has him down for keeps, but still smarting from this admission, he's faced with something really impossible. How he cherishes the thought of men rosen from the majestic ooze, talks about the scientific thinking that we have, the belligerent one. That was me, a very belligerent one I got here. And it says, Alcoholics Anonymous, and there's an answer for that guy. The answer is that Alcoholics Anonymous does not demand you believe in anything. All of its 12 steps are but suggestion. Second, to get sober and stay sober, you don't have to swallow all of step two right away. Boy, I was so glad about that one. Third, all you really need is a truly open mind. There's a little thing in that I like when we get to the open mind part. There's a thing that I look at all the time, and it's Herbert Spence in the back of the Spiritual Experience. When we read the big book, from page in the 20s to the 40s, three times it tells us to go back and read that Spiritual Experience. How many of us ever do? So my sponsor, every time I saw that little arrow stick, I was told to go back and read it. And, there's a spiritual principle. There's a principle that keeps a man in everlasting ignorance. And that principle is contempt prior to investigation. Now, I was very contemptuous when I got here. I don't know about anybody else, my way or the highway. I wasn't much, but I was all I thought about. The alcoholic thing, I'll never do this again. And all the things that my alcoholic thinking did kept me away from being open-minded. I had a very closed mind. It says we look to see which religious people are right. I would not do that. I was defiantly against that. So we got the answer to the guy who is like I was. It says it wasn't AA that had a closed mind. It was me. And it says, the minute I stopped arguing, now if you're like me, I loved arguing with my sponsor. He just loved it. He said, are you praying on it? No. Go pray on it. Tell me what you think tomorrow. And that used to get me mad. I began to see and feel. Right there, step two, gently and gradually took hold in my life. I had to stop arguing first. I had to trust somebody had a solution that I didn't believe was going to work for me. See, I became one of those people I didn't like when I got here because they were at peace with themselves. See, I like to be argumentative. I like these things about me that I made me feel terminally unique. And the word terminal means not long for life. I was dying, and I didn't even know how to let go. Then comes the second kind of alcoholic, the one who had faith but lost it. There I am again. I was a child. I was raised very religious. I stopped believing in my religion when my grandfather died, and the religion I grew up in, you had to pay to get a seat to pray on a holiday. I see you're not alone here. So I stopped talking to God. So when I got sober, I did some things when I was a young kid. Like we used to have little cans and used to go collect money for different holidays. And I used to break open the bottom of them and take the change out of it. I figured if I go into a temple when I got sober, the walls would fall on me kind of thing. So I lived in a halfway house, and right around the corner was a church, and across was a temple. And I was so scared to walk into a temple. That shows you how warped my perception was. I would go into the church, I would get down and pray, and I'd say, okay, I know you're up there. Would you do me a favor? Would you go next door and talk to the guy over there and let me go, you know, help me not drink today? That was my prayers at the beginning. And they worked, because I'm still alive and drank. So, you know, as weird as it sounds, the things we do, I had faith and I lost it. And I always tell the story of my sponsor about my faith. He used to say, you know, I used to walk into a room and I used to get there late and leave early, not like any of us ever do that. And he suggested one of the things I do is get there early, and he took one of these metal folding chairs and he wrote my name on the bottom. And I used to have to come early to find my seat. True story. Love what he did to me with that. And I was wondering how he always got there earlier and moved my seat. I never realized, shows you how sharp I was at 6 months of sobriety. I never realized every night they put the seats away and every morning they unfolded them and they ended up in a different place. I thought he really came in earlier before. Shows you the warped perception, the sharp mind of the alcoholic. And, you know, and I kept saying, I don't have faith. I would argue with him with this faith thing. And he said to me, listen, you sit in that chair every week. You never complain once or looked underneath it to see if the screws were in it that was holding the chair. You have a blind faith. He said, nah, but I don't believe in God. He would argue with him. He says, let me get this straight. Your belief is that you don't believe? He says, I said, yeah, that's right. I don't believe. He says, then you got a belief system. That's all you need. Hated sponsorship, boy, I tell you that. And it talks about what the roadblock to that is. The block of the guy who had faith and lost it is indifference, fancied self-sufficiency, prejudice, and defiance. Proved more solid and formal than those than any erected by the unconvinced agnostic or the militant atheist. See, I had these roadblocks blocking me. And there's an answer for that person as well. There's always an answer. And it says they can say to the drifter, yes, we drifted from our childhood faith too. The overconfident use was too much for us. Of course, we had glad that good homes and religious training had given us certain values. We still sure we ought to be fairly honest, tolerant, and just. We ought to be ambitious and hardworking. We became convinced that some simple rules of fair play was all we needed. So that covers the second type of guy that walked an alcoholic. Synonymous. Now there's the third type, the intellectual. Now, none of us ever think we're that smart. He's the one who is the self-sufficient man or woman. To these ASA, yes, we would like you, too smart for our own good. Now, what solution is there for the intellectual? He's got to either reconsider or die. That's a pretty strong statement for us people who think we're too smart for this thing. And I was told real early on, there is nobody too dumb for Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a lot of people that are too smart. So dummy up, Georgia, you're going to die.
Dummy up.
And that was real important for me to hear. They showed us that humility and intellect could be compatible provided we placed humility first. And there's a word that I love. You know, I go into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. You want to watch a room get quiet. And if it's topic meeting, bring up the word humility. Let's talk about humility. And you'll hear people say, well, if you talk about humility, you ain't got it. And that's not true. I love what the fifth step in the 12 and 12 says about humility. Humility is a word often misunderstood. To those of us who made progress in AA, it's a clear recognition of who and what we are by a sincere attempt to become what we could be. What a wonderful definition of who I was when I walked in here. I was a lowlife when I came in here, and I had an opportunity to be something better. And that's practicing humility. I tell you exactly where I was and what happened to me in my life. I have no more secrets. What a wonderful place to be. So they tell us that humility and intellect get along provided we place humility first. When we begin to do that, we receive the gift of faith, a faith that works, a faith that is there for you too. So that's a nice thing to know. And then there's another kind of crown, and said it talks about the biblical people, the religious people. It tells us that we are downright disgusted with Bible and all its work. They talk about the good from the bad, the begots from the begets. And it says, just like the psychiatrist says, for those people, defiance is the outstanding characteristic of many an alcoholic. And it says, so it's not strange that lots of us had our day defying God himself. Sometimes God having delivered us the good things in life which we specified, such as a greedy child makes a list for Santa Claus. More often, though, we met up with some major calamity, and to our way of thinking, we lost out because we believed God deserted us. I don't believe that, because if you're sitting in this room, God didn't desert you. I really believe that today. So a big change in the way I think when I came here. It says, when we encountered AA, when the fallacy of our defiance was revealed, at no time have we asked what God's will was for us. Instead, we've been telling him what it ought to be. I don't know about you, but I don't have any bargains I made with God. Oh, God, get me out of this one. I won't do it again. And as soon as he did it, I said, well, maybe one more time. Maybe next week I won't do it again, but I'm going to try it again tonight. Whether it be gambling, whether it be women, whether it be spending money on things I should, whether it be eating, I used every disease known to man when I got here. And it had no idea, and it's because I was not living by spiritual principles. You know, we talk about relapse, and we may not talk about it enough. People relapse for one reason and one reason only. They don't enlarge in their spiritual life. It's really that simple. The book tells me, and I believe what the book tells me today, that all went well for a while, the families reassembled, and he went out and he drank again, knowing what the dangers were. We believe the reason was he didn't enlarge in his spiritual life. It says it on page 14, it says it on page 37. Two times it tells us that we're going to, if we drink, it's because we're not enlarging our spiritual life. So I try to enlarge my spiritual life. I do the things I was taught to do real early on. I pray in the morning. I read some literature. I call another alcoholic. I go to a meeting. I say thank you at the end of the day. It's really simple if I look at it that simply. Does things get in the way of that? Every single day. But when it gets in the way of it, I learn to pick up a phone and I talk to my sponsor. I talk to someone in my support group. I don't do this alone. That was the key for me. And that gave me a closer relationship to the God of my misunderstanding at the beginning. So it tells us, at no time he asked what God's will for, as he's telling them what it ought to be. He said, we saw that no man could believe in God and defy him too. Belief meant reliance, not defiance. My first belief was believing in this program by walking in every day and trusting that certain people would be in that room. There was my hope. You know, we give experience strength and hope. I give my experience. Hopefully you'll get some strength out of that. And from that strength, you may grow some hope. The same as somebody gave me their experience, gave me some strength, and because of that strength, I had a little hope to try something a little further. And it was a process, a growing process. Then comes the, and it says, to clergymen, friends, family, doctors, the alcoholic means well and tries hard is a heartbreaking riddle. To most days, not. That's the fifth type of alcoholic, the guy who walks in here drunk. And I have a big problem when I go to an AA meeting and I see someone walk in and somebody says, oh, come back tomorrow when you're sober. If an alcoholic can't walk into an alcoholics meeting, anonymous meeting, drunk, where the hell can he go? If he can't find peace in this room, he'll never find peace. So, you know, the answer to the riddle is the quality of faith, not the quantity. I don't care how many times somebody walks in drunk. They have an opportunity to get a chance, at a second chance at life. We just have to be here and love them, because none of us walked in here because of our assets of character. We all walked in here because we were broken. We were devastated, and we didn't know how to live life real well. So, you know, it says we wallowed in emotional and mistaken for real, true religious feeling. That was me. My wife doesn't let me talk to my kids. Well, why not? Gee, I wasn't home in 6 months, you know. I can imagine that, you know. Or, you know, the things that we do while we're out there, and we want to know why people don't trust us. Or even while we're in here, for some of us. You know, I have to really pay attention to what I'm doing. It says, a lot of times we say, God grant me my wish instead of thy will be done. You know, the serenity prayer was a big thing for me for the second step. And, you know, in the second step, it talks about sanity. Now, here's my favorite one. Doing the same thing over, expecting a different result. Absolutely not what I believe sanity is. I did the same thing over and time again because I wanted that result. I wanted to get loaded. So to me, it wasn't expecting a different result. Insanity for me was doing the same thing over again, getting the same result. I like what the 12 and 12 says. Sanity is defined as soundness in mind. I didn't have a sound mind when I got here, that's for sure. The big book, I like the definition in the big book for soundness of mind, for sanity. How can such a lack of the portion of the ability to think straight be called anything else? We call it plain insanity. See, I couldn't think clearly. My thoughts were warped, they were twisted, and what I did to solve them was drink, so I felt okay. But I really never did feel okay. There's a part in the book that talks about it in the back, and it says, I'm Jerry alone and I can't do that. And it says, yes, you can. You just got to remember, you've tapped the source of power much greater than yourself. To duplicate was what we have found. And what they're talking about in the big book, when they talk about that, is the first 100. What they found was permanent sobriety, contented, happy, useful life. It's only a matter of willingness, patience, and labor. If you're like me, you were impatient when you got here. I still struggle with that one. I didn't want to do the work that was laid out before me. So I didn't want to do the labor. And I wasn't willing. So I stayed sick in Alcoholics Anonymous. One of the most devastating things for anybody to watch in AA is untreated alcoholism. I go to rooms all the time. I get an opportunity to work with a lot of people. I've been blessed with those gifts. But I watch untreated alcoholism all the time. And you know what? If somebody doesn't find the power that works in their life, that untreated alcoholism leads to a drink. And I've watched it happen time and time again. You know, I tell lots of stories about my second step. You know, I struggled with it a lot. Bob said to me one day, you struggling with your step two? Then let me ask you a question. You think you're God so well? Why don't you go out there and go down to the beach and stop a wave? I said, I can't do that. He said, you can't be God. He said, well, I'm still the one in charge here. You know, I got choices to make. He says, I want you to make a choice. I want you to go to the drugstore. I want you to get a box of X-Lax and not go to the bathroom. I said, I can't do that. He said, then you can't be God. Working this step and applying it in my life started to change. And the way it changed is I started to look at different principles. You know, I came in here, I was unmanageable. Let's talk about negative principles, because a principle is a belief. And I had some assumptions and beliefs, which were my principles when I got here. I believed I was okay and you weren't. That's an assumption. That's a principle. I lived by that. I used to have a belief, a principle, that what's mine is mine, what's yours is going to be mine. That didn't work out real well for me either. And there were some negative principles I came in here with. One of the negative principles I came in here, I was unmanageable, and I didn't even know it. I was helpless, I had an obsession, I was belligerent, I was prejudiced, I was an overthinker. I believed I was superior than most of you guys here because I ran a union, don't you know who I am. I was defiant, I had a lot of bigotry going on. I knew I was intellectual. I thought I was self-sufficient. I lived under a bridge. How self-sufficient is that? You know. And I think about the insanity of how I really looked at myself. I was contemptuous. I was full of hypocrisy. I didn't believe. I was so full of junk. I smelled. I had a lot of indifference. I was bewildered by all that was going on. I thought you guys were really wacky. I had a lot of pride and a lot of self-righteousness, and they told me how to get to right size. How did I get to right size? I had to trust a process I didn't believe was going to work for me. As I stayed here, the second step started giving me some gifts. The gifts of the second step is I get a belief system. And my belief system in the beginning was that I didn't believe, and I was okay with that. And it slowly changed. Like I said, my God has not changed from the day I walked in here. What's changed is my perception of how I believe in that God today. I found the higher power. I've gotten a lot of faith. I live by faith today, a lot of it. We'll talk about my health at another time. I got a relationship with God out of the second step, a God that I didn't understand, that my sponsor did, because that's what I prayed to. I learned about honesty, justice, and willingness, and service, and that's really how I got tricked into AA, with service. Open-mindedness. I learned about amends and second step because I started doing things that I should have been doing and picking up a phone, and that was my God working in my life, and that power was working through other people. I got some hope and responsibility, and I got some decency, and I learned to practice some things like prayer every day. I got some values, which I didn't have when I got in here. There's a lot of truth that I came out of that second step, and I got to make more admissions, new surrenders. And, you know, through that process, I want to end with a little bit about service. I got kind of tricked into AA. You know, I started learning it this way. I watched a group of guys, men and women, I should say, when I first got here that were pretty sober in the meeting I went to. And when they'd leave the meeting, I thought they were drinking because they were way too happy. Way too happy, man. I was so miserable when I got here. My kids wouldn't talk to me. I had an ex-wife that didn't let me speak to them. I had a job that wanted me to stay in Florida, don't come back to New York. I had all kinds of stuff going on. I had a facing some time in 25 years to life of labor racketeering. I had some things going on in my life that weren't nice, you know. Just like most of us, I came in here to show you guys how to live. You know, and that's really how I walked in here. And, you know, and I watched these guys go out, and I used to sneak out behind them because I didn't want them to know I was following them. And they go to Denny's, not knowing I was following them. And they would turn around one day, and they invited me over, and they would sit down, and they were really happy. And I sat there, and I really wondered, how can I steal this from them? How do I manipulate this? How do I buy this? You can't. You got to stay here long enough to get it. And the way you get it is by giving it to someone else. And that second step is where that higher power comes into your life and helps you to start giving back to others. Stand by a door if you're brand new, or a week here, and say hello to somebody walking in who's here one day. You're doing service. And that's the kind of service I was taught to do real early on. Set up chairs, ashtrays, brooms, and chairs. Clean up rooms, wash coffee cups, which we don't do anymore. Wash the floors, clean the toilet bowls, sweep the floors. That was the stuff that I was given to do. So I came here early and I said hello to everybody. And then I stayed later and I tried to talk to people. You know, through that process, a power that was working in this room through that second tradition, the loving God, was expressing himself. And I was seeing that God through other people. So whenever I go to a meeting and I hear somebody sharing something, I'll hear God speaking because my God has skin. He'll speak through one of you to me. And that's where I learned to use that second step. Thanks for letting me share.